Hello, folks, and welcome to podcast number 45 with a special guest today to talk about music, Motown music, with a man who knows all about Motown music. And we're brought to you by the Suburban Collection, 26 dealerships with over 26. I just found this out. I've always said 26 dealerships are 26 different brands. Well, it's 26 dealerships, I found out today. We've been doing this for over a year, with over 26 different brands, and they're all over town, obviously. Began in 1949 with Dave Fisher Sr. It was an Oldsmobile dealership, and that branched out to where it is right now, the Suburban Collection, so named because they have so many dealerships and so many people. As a matter of fact, over 300,000 people dealt with them, bought a car, in other words, last year from the Suburban Collection, maybe more than one, come to think of it. So they are, you know, committed, obviously, to the local area, obviously, with all these dealerships. They do a lot of charity work because they're so involved in so many different areas, so it's easy for them to do, and they do an awful lot of it. They got the Free Press Award for the, I haven't got it written down here, but, oh, yes, I do, the Free Press Automotive Leadership Award for Outstanding Metro Detroit Retailer. 37,000 cars, that's it, sold last year, and they're still growing. So there it is, the Suburban Collection, and we're proud to say there once again, Dave Fisher Sr., Dave Butler, the whole gang, our proud sponsor. Hello, Jack. How are you?
Good, Dick. Good to be with you.
Jack Ryan is with us today. Now, Jack has written a book, which I found very interesting, called Recollections of the Detroit Years of the Motown Sound by the people who made it.
Correct.
Now, I noticed one thing, Jack, I want to ask you about that's a little unusual. It strikes me that it says here this book was written in 1982. Why Correct. Are we talking about that right now?
Well, I have a very interesting answer that surprised the daylights out of me.
Yeah?
My publisher, Tom Saunders, who's also with us today.
Hello, Tom. How are you?
Good, Dick. How you doing?
Fine. Tom is here and also Jack's wife, Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thanks. Go ahead, Jack.
Well, you're right. It was written 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Since then,
yeah,
other roads have been traveled.
Okay.
But I was with some people that showed me on the internet that my book was selling for over $200 on
eBay?
The internet, on eBay.
Oh, really? No kidding.
One was selling for as much as $1,000.
These
in
are
Europe.
Motown fans, obviously.
And I don't want any. I assure you, it isn't the written word they were paying for. It was the scarcity of the product.
Yeah, I understand that.
I
put albums out before, and they're, you know.
All right.
They'll go for $1.50 because of the scarcity
exactly.
of the project.
But
I mean the project.
I said nobody should pay that.
Yeah.
And Tom came to me with the idea that we should re-release it.
And you have
And
done
we
that.
Have indeed done that.
Okay.
Yes.
And we'll tell the folks where they can get this thing. So anyway, why did you write this book? Did you know the Motown people at the time, the big stars? Or
I had
some of
been
them,
a freelance newspaper writer.
Yeah.
And an entertainment writer for various papers around the Detroit area.
Okay.
The only two that anybody in your listening audience would have ever heard of were the Observer and Eccentric and the Royal Oak Tribune.
I recall those, along with the Whip and Raincoat Quarterly that I used to read avidly. You were involved with that, I thought.
No,
it
was C&G Publishing on the east
side. Okay.
And those are the type that come to your house unwanted that you put at the bottom of the birdcage so that
not necessarily.
Tweety would have something to read.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. I know you haven't fully answered this question.
All right.
Other than
I will.
It was not available. And
I promise I will.
How do you define the Motown sound? Now, that may be...
For me, all right. Now, I'm quite sure the producers, the writers, Barry Gordy may have a different take
okay.
on this.
All right. I couldn't get him, Jack. You don't mind that you're
well,
filling in.
Well, I did. And,
okay, all right.
So let me...
He's geographically undesirable out in California. Couldn't
well, but he
in.
Was he's here a lot more than
is
people
really,
think. Oh, yes.
He is, really.
That's where I see him.
What is it, family he comes in for? Or?
Well, yes. The last time I saw him was at Esther's funeral.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay.
But
that was last August, as
yes,
I recall.
Yes, it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the Motown sound to me mm-hmm. is the musicians who just recently, within the last 5 years, got some credit with a movie called Standing in the Shadows of Motown.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, on Monday nights, I would... Do you remember DB's over at the Hyatt Regency?
I do. The DB's Club, yes.
Yes. Well, one of the musicians in Johnny Trudell's band was a guy named Earl Van Dyke.
Okay. Oh,
and
Earl
I
Van
got
Dyke,
to
very famous.
Exactly. Yeah. And I got to know him because we'd be there on press night every Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him I was thinking about doing this. And he says, well, if you ever do, be sure to include the musicians. And I said, well, you'll be the first guy I come to.
So you got the stars and the musicians who backed them up.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And as we talked with the rest of the musicians, Dick, these guys were the ones that put the heart and soul into the music.
It's now, always that way, isn't it, though?
Yes, mm-hmm. And got the least credit for it. They got $5 a session.
Yeah, sure.
And no credit. Couldn't leave what they called the pit because they had a show band that would go on the road with them called the Choker Campbell Orchestra.
Really?
Yes. Wow. And these guys never got out of the studio.
Yeah.
And these were some top-flight musicians.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they deserved more credit. And that's where, to me, the Motown sound came from.
I remember doing a record hop one time. And my guest star, and this may be the only Motown act that was ever my so-called guest star at the record hop, which, by the way, was at a roller rink on Warren Avenue in, what would that be? I don't know. Not in Warren, but Warren Avenue out in, it's in the western suburbs somewhere. Anyway, Bob Liggett, you know Bob Liggett who owns the Big Boy restaurant chain now and a radio station, all that kind of, Bob spun the records for me. These are my Keener days early on.
Oh, yes.
And Edwin Starr.
Oh, 25 miles from home.
Okay.
Agent 00 Soul. He really started at a record company called Rick Tick.
Okay.
That was owned by a local thug. Named Eddie Wingate.
Is he on the witness list?
Eddie's
right now
long
for Kwame?
Since gone.
Oh, is he okay?
Eddie's
okay.
Long since.
Well, maybe
with
it's a good thing for Kwame, because otherwise he would be on the witness list.
Yeah, and Edwin Starr obviously is no longer with us as well.
Well, Edwin was there, and he, you know, he did his songs and stuff. He mouthed them to him and so forth.
Lip-synced
them, and so it reminded me when I see the Seinfeld episode of, do you know the one where Jerry convinces Elaine that Leon Tolstoy's original title for War and Peace was War.
War. What is it?
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing. Hua.
Then obviously you never saw the Boston Legal episode where Edwin Starr's nephew sued to get the rights to sing his songs, and he was singing in the courtroom. He was singing War. What is it good for?
Is that right?
In front of a jury.
I never saw
and
that
he was
show.
Quite good. I was don't know really? Whether he was, in fact, his nephew or not, but that was the storyline.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, my favorite, I would have to say, too, I love the Four Tops and Baby, I Need Your Lovin'.
That was what I remember when I interviewed you for the book, Mr.
Well, but I thought you said something else in the book, that it was not Baby, I Need Your Lovin', but I Can't Help Myself.
No, every time you said, when you had come to Detroit, you couldn't turn the radio on without hearing the Four Tops.
That's right.
And that's what I remember you telling
1965,
me.
1965, believe it or not.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, Keener 13.
Keener 13.
But I do remember.
6
I remember,
to 10.
I remember, well, I started out from 10 to 11. No, 10 to 1 at night, 10 p.m. to 1. What happened, I got the job offer. I was in Cincinnati. I turned it down because they wanted me to do 3 to 7 in the afternoon. Gary Stevens had done that.
Sure.
And Frank Maruca, the program director, raved so much about Gary in my interview that when he finally offered me the job, because Gary was leaving to go to New York, I turned it down. So I went back to Cincinnati, and then he called me up and offered me 7 to 10 at night. Didn't want to do
it. Scott Regan was
Scott
Berger.
Well, this is just before Scotty
yeah.
was hired. Mm-hmm. So I turned that down. Why did I turn it down? Because I didn't want to do a teen kind of show, which I'd never done before. So I did. I turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
A week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. Later, he calls me up, the program director, and he offers me 10 to 1 at night, and I take the job. And my wife said to me, well, you're some businessman. You go from 3 to 7 in the afternoon, which is real prime time stuff, mm-hmm. to 10 o'clock at night, to mm-hmm. 1 in the morning. I said, nobody cares about that. I can really have a ball, which I did. And eventually, 2 months later, in fact, Swing and Sweeney ended up getting fired because of a fist fight in the studio with Jerry Goodwin. And this is all well-documented stuff. And anyway, so they hired me they shifted me to mornings, and the rest was history. But anyway, and I love Marvin Gaye as well.
Mm-hmm. The one time I met Marvin Gaye, he had just settled some legal dispute he had because he got himself in an awful lot of trouble. Stole mm-hmm. his child from his second wife.
Did he?
Moved to England. And
Marvin moved to England, okay.
Yeah, he lived in England for quite a while and didn't pay his taxes. And right. then Columbia Records wanted him real bad and paid off all his debt and got him so that he could come back. But by then, he had fallen under the influence of drugs quite badly.
Isn't it amazing how many people we hear that don't pay their taxes, the stars? What are they thinking? Because eventually, they're going to pay big time.
I can
mentally,
explain it
physically,
to you.
The whole
I
show. Are you going to explain?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Have you done this, Jack?
I manage the Contours.
Oh, you do or did?
I do.
Oh, you manage the
I
Contours.
Own a third of the name.
I wish I'd known that, Jack. When I introduced Jack Ryan, I would have said, and manager of the Contours.
Well, we're talking about a book today, but we'll throw this in. You told me not to tell you anything ahead of time.
I did. He called me on the phone last night and said, you know, what are we going to do? And I said, well, you tell me, basically. And we started talking. I said, woo, Jack, you, no more. Don't be. It was like we were in the green room rehearsing ahead of time, and I hate to do that.
I understand.
We lose all the spontaneity.
Well, I understand.
Yeah.
Well, the spontaneity here is that there's two words that combine in show business.
Okay.
Most artists can take care of the show but can't take care of the business
for
a variety of reasons.
Yep.
They never had to. At Motown, everything was taken care of you. Mm-hmm. You were really babysat.
Yeah, from like the Hollywood stars.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So many of them had no concept of doing quarterly tax returns, yearly tax. I'm self-employed, so I got to pay quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so does Sylvester Potts, the original Contour that I deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I take care of his taxes for him because that way I know they get paid.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Sylvester go to jail recently No, I that's somebody else. It's another Potts.
Yeah, for beating the hell out of an old disc jockey.
That's Kwame Potts. Whatever, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jack. Can we interrupt you here?
That's all right. I'm very familiar with your work, Mr. Purden.
Oh, well, then you know I interrupt a lot.
That's quite all
Let
right.
Let me ask you a question. Did Motown ever have the Jackson 5?
Yeah, that was their first major record label.
It was?
Label.
I don't know why I don't associate
And let me
that
tell you where
Motown.
where they auditioned. Hmm. Actually, Diana Ross was given credit for discovering them.
So I understand.
She did not discover them.
You did.
A guy named Bobby Taylor of Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers, one of their lower echelon groups.
I guess,
Working in Gary, Indiana, doing a show.
Mm-hmm.
One of the opening acts was the Jacksons.
And that was their hometown, right?
Exactly.
Gary, Indiana. Mm-hmm.
So he comes back raving about this group. So Barry says, well, let's bring him in and we'll take a look
Barry
at him.
Barry Gordy.
Yes. Had him rehearse at his home over on Hamilton in Chicago, in his mansion, in the pool house.
Okay.
And afterwards, the kids all went swimming. They obviously won the audition.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is history. Not necessarily great history, but it's...
Well, is it true, a rumor that I heard, in fact, I know where I read the... Not a rumor, it's in this book. That's where I did read it, come to think of it. And that is that the Jackson 5 were somehow replaced in terms of popularity with the audience by the Osmond Brothers?
Well, it was like, and you'll appreciate this, being an old sock hop kind of guy, Battle of the Bands.
Sure.
Well, this was the white Jacksons. They were the black, the Osmonds were the white Jacksons. They appealed to their audience. The Jacksons appealed to their audience. And then, the Jacksons obviously surpassed that, but the Osmonds did quite well with TV shows and things like that.
How about this? When did the white audience catch on to the black acts, the Motown acts?
Well, when I was in high school at St. Mary's of Redford High School in Detroit.
And there were Tom Ryan went to?
No, he went to St. Gregory's.
That's right.
He used to hang around a bar near there because I used to see him in Dooley's all the time.
In Dooley's. That was his favorite spot.
Yes.
That's right.
When he didn't fall out. into his Corvette, and that was an ugly scene. But
Ryan, really?
Yeah, no.
Well, I was paying him a little money.
Evidently not enough. Yeah,
apparently. Too much.
Could have gone to a much nicer place.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Tom Ryan. No.
Forget Tom Ryan. God bless him. He's your sidekick for many years, and I understand.
We're talking about the Osmonds and the Jackson 5, and where were we, guys? Was there...
When did the white audiences start to
appreciate? All right, back in high school at St. Mary's.
Thank you, Mr. Saunders.
You so much. Abbott and Costello here doing a routine, and we forgot where we were.
That's right.
I would go to the Motown reviews down at the Fox Theater.
Okay.
Predominantly a black audience.
Mm-hmm.
But let me tell you what I'd see for $2.50.
Yeah.
And this is in like 1964.
Okay.
A movie. Eric the Conqueror, as I remember, with Cameron Mitchell was the movie.
I'd show the Mitchell first, and then the act would come on?
No, they'd come on first.
Really?
And that particular year, they had... Stevie Wonder was the featured star.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin Gaye.
Mm.
The Contours.
Mm.
Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. Martha and the Vandellas.
They came on before...
Before the
Eric
movie.
The Conqueror,
before the movie.
Whoa.
Plus special added attraction...
Mm-hmm.
The Marvelettes and the Temptations.
Seriously.
For $2.50. Now, for $2.50, you also got wallet-sized pictures of the Motown acts that were on the show and a Motown album.
Incredible.
Exactly. For $2.50. Six shows a day.
Six shows a day.
Oh, this started at 10 in the morning.
Well, I was just assuming this was an 8 o'clock show. And no. That was it.
Oh, no. Everybody did a song.
Oh, no kidding.
Stevie might have done two. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very limited to what they could do.
How interesting.
Yeah. And the most interesting one I saw, Junior Walker was on one of them. Yeah. And he was a tremendous performer. And he fell into the orchestra pit at the Fox.
Really?
And never stopped playing.
Is that right?
Yeah, off the stage into the orchestra pit. He never stopped playing.
And was there any truth to the story? Soupy Sales told me one time he was emceeing one of these shows at the Fox Theater. And the act was coming, you know, they're middle of the stage. And then they dance off kind of to the right, then dance off to the middle, and then dance off to the left, then back to the middle. And he said he was standing on the right side of the stage, and all of a sudden he saw one of the guys in the group go down. And just like laying on the stage. He said, I didn't know what it was. Well, then the group comes dancing back to the right where he was standing and off the stage. And the guy says, call an ambulance for this guy. And Subi says, what? And this time they dance back the other way, the center, they go back to the left. Now they come back.
Everything was choreographed is what you're telling me.
Now they come back up to the right, over to Subi where he's standing again. And the guy says, call an ambulance. And Subi can't understand what exactly. So back he goes, they go again. The middle of the thing, back to the left, back to. Now they get over there, Subi again, and the guy says, call an ambulance. He's having an epileptic fit. No kidding. I'm not kidding you. And Subi said, and at that point I called an ambulance. Although you'd think somebody would have called it a little beforehand, anyway, but that was a story that Subi told me. And I said, I'm not going to say, you know, didn't happen. I wasn't there.
Well, you never let heard me that do
story.
That for you.
You never heard that
let
story?
Let me do that for
oh,
you.
Oh, good. Tell me.
Because the Motown, it could have been at the Fox Theater. It wasn't a Motown review.
Oh, okay.
Because they had their own MC, a guy named Bill Murray.
Mm.
And Soupy would not have been there for that particular
I see,
show.
Sure.
They did have other shows, as I know for a fact, the day the riots started in Detroit in 1967, Martha Reeves told me she was doing a Swingin' Time review at the Fox.
Sounds
it was Robin Seymour.
Robin Seymour, yeah.
Along with a group called the Capitals, and who did Cool Jerk.
Oh, sure.
And several other groups, probably Nathaniel Mayer, people like that. And
speaking of songs.
Yes.
Who picked the songs for all the Motown groups?
Every Friday, they would have a meeting in the Motown hierarchy's office that the producers would come in and pitch their various products. And Barry would listen to everybody's pitch. Everybody'd play the song, and then they'd all vote on it. And they'd pick one song that was to be released.
Now, you say they played the song. You mean
it's done. The song is done. It's ready to be released. Okay. Everybody brought their finished product.
Okay.
Because producers would work with various artists.
Okay.
Smokey wrote for The Temptations, Mary Wells. He was the original writer of most of the songs in the early days for the early groups. Him and Berry Gordy. So they would have this vote, and that's the one that would be released, the one that they voted on. Now, then they'd bring in what I would consider like a peer group in the afternoon of high school kids from various high schools around the Detroit area.
Right.
And they would play the other songs or play all the songs that they had ready to release.
Right.
And the kids would, like, vote, you know.
Right, sure.
And he'd have them in and give them, you know, pop and potato chips, and they'd vote, and he'd listen to them, you know, and he'd decide what the kids wanted would probably be what he'd release.
Well, apparently they did it very well because, I mean, the rest of
nothing was left
there,
to chance, Dick. I can't stress that enough because Barry initially his guy was Jackie Wilson.
Didn't Barry write Lonely Teardrops
and Reed Petite?
Do I know this stuff? No, folks, I read it in Jack's book right here.
You played that song before I ever heard it, and you know it, and I know it.
No, I don't. I played that song before.
Oh, you probably played it in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, this guy knows too much about me. Oh, no, you're right. I was down there 1 year before
Cincinnati.
Wait a minute, that was before Cincinnati, yeah.
Or should we talk about Baltimore?
No, because we don't talk about anything that's less than 6 weeks in duration of my career.
I understand.
And that was 5 weeks.
That's how Specs Howard opened up that studio, because you took his job.
Well, that's yet another story.
Martin and Howard.
Martin
and Howard. Gone. Great. Gone vacation. And who stole their job?
Well, you know.
Little Dickie P.
Hey, don't blame me. Blame Chuck Fritz and Joe Baccarella. They're the ones
Joe
that made
Baccarella.
The
he used to be a WCAR.
Oh, yes, he was. Absolutely. Those are the days. Yeah. Hey, the Supremes. We haven't talked about the Supremes. Obviously, the biggest of all the Motown.
They were the
groups,
crown
right?
jewel.
Yes, Primettes originally.
Primettes.
In your book,
yes.
I see.
Yes.
Recollections of
But
Motown.
They were a sister group to the Primes, who was Eddie Kendricks, Paul Williams, and Melvin Franklin.
And they became three of
the Temptations, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. They joined Otis Williams' group, who was called The Distance.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had another lead singer who, on New Year's Eve, they had a party. Motown had a party. And this lead singer, I wish I knew his name. I really don't.
I wish you did too, Jack. It'd probably be
yeah, it'd be something that'll keep you awake tonight. But he hit Paul Williams in the head with a beer bottle at the party because Barry said, why don't you go on and do another song? He says, no. We're done. They didn't pay us for this anyway, so I'm going home.
I love it.
And Paul says, get your ass out. Oh, I'm sorry, get out there and sing.
Oh, this is a podcast.
I understand.
I was on FM. You could say ass.
Yeah, okay.
If you had
get
to.
Out there and sing.
I mean, Oprah said ass, you know.
So he wouldn't do it. He turns around, hits Paul with a beer bottle. And that was the end of him, and that's how David Ruffin was brought into the group that night.
Really?
Because David was there as a drummer at Motown at the time, but was dying to get a recording contract.
And Marvin Gaye was a drummer
initially with,
on, too.
He was
I know this from your
book. He was initially with Harvey and the Moonglows.
Harvey and the Moonglows.
Yes.
Boy, that goes back sometime. That's such a traditional
Ten
type
Commandments
of name
of love.
In those days, you know? Ten Commandments of Love.
And Harvey Fuqua became the head of the artist development department at Motown.
Is that right?
He married Gwen Gordy.
See, I will put on the 50s channel, as well as the 60s and 70s channel on Sirius XM.
Yes, I
am. And my wife will hear the 50s saying, oh, please turn it off. I can't stand it. And this goes back to a theory of mine, and I don't know, you probably wouldn't have a theory in this, certainly not in the book, I don't think. I think that men like oldies more than women do. Here's the theory.
That's why men wear underwear until it's like three strands. They like things that are old.
They do. You are so correct about that. Yes. Men, because the theory that somebody said a long time ago I subscribed to, and that is that, whether he's right or wrong, but I kind of agree with it. And that is that in the days when the guy was younger, let's say 50, 60, 70, whatever it might be, whatever the decade is, he was like on the, you know, the out there trying to get work and advancing in his job, and it was an exciting life. In the meantime, his wife was at home having babies and feeding the babies and bringing up the kids and not getting out of the house, and you know what I mean, that kind of thing. So they don't want to hear that kind of music. Let's not say all women don't like oldies, but the men like them better than the women. I have no idea if it's a proven theory or not. I have no idea at all. But
well, you've proven that it's your theory.
In my car, when I turned that on, my wife, oh, please, I don't want to hear Fats Domino sing Blueberry Hill, even though I love that song.
We met Fats Domino once at the P Jazz, and I know you went to it.
Oh,
you
yeah,
met
sure.
Stan Kenton,
I
as
sure
I recall.
Did. I sat with...
Just before he passed away, was it?
It was about a year before he passed away, but he was very ill. And
it was a cold night, as I recall you said.
It was
he
a chilly
said he
night.
Was cold.
It was a chilly night, and I was sitting... My knees were literally almost up against his piano bench.
Mm-hmm.
You know, P Jazz was just a very small type of thing.
On
the top of the Pontchartrain Hotel. And I remember that near the end, about half an hour before 11 o'clock, he turned to me, and he just said, I'm so cold. And about 5 minutes later, he ended... the concert, you know, the show with his great band, you know, Stan. I mean, that's my all-time favorite music, that kind of stuff. So anyway, but he died, I think it was a year later, and I was in Chicago, and I turned on the radio, and I got up on a Sunday morning, and it said Stan Kenton had died.
We were at P Jazz, Fats Domino was entertaining, and I was really wanted to meet him.
I wish I'd gone.
He was leaving. But he was leaving because he was changing his outfit for the second show.
Oh, I see.
And we got on the elevator with him, and he sang to my lovely wife, because his manager did not want us on the elevator.
Right.
I don't know why. I guess he thought I was going to rob him.
Managers are that way.
They are a pain in the ass.
Ultra,
you're absolutely right.
Oh, look at that twice.
They're the scum of the earth.
Ultra protection for their star.
They're like rotten grout around your bathtub.
They really are. My experience at Pine Knob, and I had a lot of experiences there because I used to MC every opening, every Wednesday night in the old days of Pine Knob, that was always the opening night. Mm-hmm. And so I the contract with the station was that
Send a jock out there to...
And I was the jock, always on Wednesday night. And so I did many of those things. So the biggest confrontation I had was with... who did Fire and Rain?
James Taylor.
Thank you very much. James Taylor, thank you, Tom. James Taylor did that, and the manager didn't want me to go out and MC.
Well, were you supposed to be the voice of God off stage?
No, he didn't want anything at all like
James
that.
James was to walk out and
yeah,
no one.
Yeah, and some of them I'd like to do that. They just like to walk out on stage.
Sinatra did that.
Sinatra did that, exactly right. But Sinatra was cool.
Well, he was him.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, he was my biggest problem. But I said, look, we've got a contract, have to do it. And so instead of doing like 10 lines out there on the stage, which I kind of tried for, I did one. And one night I walked out there and it was, who did Love to Love You? No, it was a black artist, not Motown, big, deep, huge voice. I think he's dead now.
Barry White?
Like Barry White. And I walked out and the crowd was mostly a black crowd. And I mean, far and away. And I walked out and I said, good evening, I'm Dick Burton from WXYZ. And it was like, that simulates applause. And I said, and here's Barry White.
Yeah, well, that's smart. That's smart on your part. Yeah. Well, you're not going to win that audience.
No,
over.
That was not my audience. It was as easy as that. Not that we had black listeners. We did.
No, if they'd have had Frantic Ernie Durham on, it might have worked a little better.
That brings up your book here again, Jack Ryan, Recollections of Motown, the Detroit Years, the Motown Sound by the people who made it. And because in the back of the book you have some of the disc jockeys mentioned.
I felt that was extremely critical to the book.
It was very well. It was very nice of you because my picture is in there. But Dave Schaefer, a dear friend, now deceased.
I as a matter of fact, I did an interview yesterday that we were joking.
Mm-hmm.
Martha Reeves was my spokesperson for this book.
Okay.
And Martha had just moved back from California.
Yep.
And she was looking to get her roots back in Detroit at mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. And I went and picked her up and I said, well, we're going to go do some interviews. And I walked into Cozy Radio.
Mm-hmm. 95.5.
And Avery was on in the afternoon.
Mark Avery, and he's in the book here.
Yeah, he was on, I want to say, from 2 to 6. And
he did afternoon drive. Yeah.
5 o'clock or so, and he's dying. He just wants to get out, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And he looked up. He was reading some copy with his glasses down like this. And mm-hmm. He looked up and saw Martha. His eyes bugged out like a raccoon on steroids because he was looking for anything to kill the rest of the day.
Well,
and here comes Martha walking in with this fat guy. He's
Fats Domino was back in town.
No, huh? Yeah. Here he was. Exactly. And here so I brought her in, and Dave Schaefer comes in.
Dave was the program director.
He was, and he came in, and they all reminisced about various dances and various...
I would not have gone to 95.5 from CKLW had it not been for Dave Schaefer. Dave was the program director, and then mm-hmm. Dave was fired 6 months after I got there by the general manager, Jim Malay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here I had gone over there for the reason to work with Dave, because Dave, I love Dave.
He was a very nice man. You're right.
Well, Dave was I've said this. I've
Jack the Bellboy when I was a kid.
That's right. I have emceed 4 of the radio reunions, you know, the Art Volo birthday parties, basically.
Right, over at the Hilton.
And there have been 4. I've emceed all 4. And my favorite line that I've used on 2 or maybe 3 of them, because it was my favorite line, was when I introduced Dave Schaefer. And I said, Dave was a rather unusual program director in that he actually liked people.
Well, who was the guy you got? You and Schaefer used to talk.
It got a better laugh than it got from Jack just now, I'll tell you that.
Well, you and Schaefer were talking about a guy that would listen at a concert.
Well, I'm talking about Paul Drew. That was Paul Drew at CKLW.
And he would mm-hmm. check on everyone, mm-hmm. no matter what time it was. And
well, he would call all the guys. I never worked at CK in those days, but he would call. He had an earpiece and he listened to the station. The story went 24
hours
a day.
Was it an ear check, they call it, or something?
No, he would just listen with an earpiece to the live broadcast. Okay. And when he heard something he didn't like, he'd call the guy on the bat phone, so to speak, and chew him up. And Dave told me this was absolutely true. He actually did that. Now, when I saw Paul Drew, maybe the only time I ever saw him in person, he was sitting about 4 feet from, maybe 3 feet, from Elton John on stage at the Olympia. It was the first time I ever saw Elton John. I took our two oldest girls, Jennifer and Jackie. Jackie's not here on the podcast today, by the way. She's not feeling well. I forgot to mention that earlier. But anyway, So consequently, he had an earpiece. I could see I was like in the sixth row, and he had an earpiece in his ear. I said, don't tell me he's actually listening to his radio station while sitting 3 feet from Elton John, who's playing the piano and singing songs here at the stadium. I mean, it was bizarre. And anyway, I had some lines that I thought were very good
control,
about Paul Drew.
He had some control issues.
I wouldn't do them on the podcast. But anyway, yeah.
He had some
real control issues.
Schaefer told me that he taped his show on Saturday night so he could go out and do sock hops.
Yeah, sure.
And the guy had called, and he's obviously not there.
That's right. That was a fireable activity.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Well,
an extra 100, 200 bucks and doing a sock hop?
Oh, sure. You'd be with Father Bryson over in the east side at Notre Dame High School.
Contours' first major gig like that was with Father Bryson at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
For 50 cents, the sock hop.
They paid the Contours 50 cents?
They didn't pay him at all. Barry sent him there.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They had Do You Love Me out.
Yeah.
And Dionne Warwick was on the show with Don't Make Me Over.
Isn't that
for 50 cents?
Folks? Can you believe these stars that, you know, getting started?
Yeah.
Did these dances?
Yes, they had to. That was a must.
Those are some fun days.
Well, you certainly lived them.
And you mentioned Fran Agerney, and Fran Agerney Durham is in the book too, and along with Tom Shannon, dear buddy of mine who lives out in Monterey, California now.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, did you know each other in
We knew each other in Buffalo.
Buffalo. Yeah. That was his theme song.
And I was walking in WXRA radio one day when I was in high school, and Tom was walking out, and somebody introduced us. Mm. And then I hadn't seen Tom for many years until he, you know, got on the radio in Buffalo, and then I got to know him there and so on and so forth. But, hey, all this stuff, with the exception of what I just said about Tom Shannon, myself, is in this book by Jack Ryan, Recollections, The Detroit Years, The Motown Sound by the People Who Made It. Now, you wrote this in 1982. You have put it out again because you discovered
that people around the world
on eBay were paying $1,000.
Up to $1,000, but going price is $200.
Okay. So you have reissued the book.
Yeah, nobody should have to pay $200 for a book.
It's a big one. It is, what'd you say, Tom?
I won an award.
Tom Saunders is your publisher. Tom, he won an award with his book, and I neglected to mention.
Now it's $300.
Right. What is the award that Jack won?
He was up for, actually he was nominated for a couple, three awards, but we just found out yesterday that he won the National Independent Excellence Award, and they award, these are two small publishers, and they awarded this in the music category, and they have a lot of different categories, but he won for music.
Congratulations to you, Jack.
Well, thank you, Mr. Purton, giving praise indeed from the Marconi Hall of Fame disc jockey that you were.
Only because you put my picture in the book.
Well, the picture was sent to me by one Richard Purton. Richard Burton.
Didn't
that was it.
Liz
yeah,
Taylor
he,
signed it or
he was
anything?
In between Liz and I the Hard Place or something.
I got a lot of guys were, I think, from what I understand.
Yes.
237 pages, so a lot of pictures.
Yeah. Even if people...
Here are the Supremes dressed as nuns.
Yes, that was from a Tarzan episode with Ron Ely.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Not kidding. I'll be doggone.
Yeah. They played missionary nuns.
Mm-hmm. The Spinners. We got Rare Earth.
My biggest regret, Dick, about the book is so many of the people that helped me compile the book are no longer with us.
Well, that's right.
And that's life, I guess.
Death is part of life. That's
but,
for sure.
I was sure happy to see like Gladys Knight dancing. Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, DWTS.
And, she was one of my favorites.
Insiders say.
Yeah, she was very
sweet
helpful
lady,
to me.
Sweet lady.
Very helpful to me.
Well, it's a great book. And a picture of Hitsville, USA right on the front cover there. Jack, congratulations to you.
Well, do you think maybe your audience might like to know where they could buy the book?
I was going
to
ask. And what's the price of the book?
Tom?
$26.95. But you can get it on Kindle for $13.95.
Because I haven't got a nickel yet, so I don't know.
I understand.
You know how those go, Dick.
So they can get it on Kindle, Amazon.com, and you can get it...
Amazon.com or MotownBook.com, or you can go to BarnesandNoble.com, or you can go to any one of the many, many independent bookstores around Detroit. Pure Detroit has it downtown, and places like that. The Detroit store.
Detroit Star, where's that?
Somerset.
Oh, Somerset. I've seen that. Yeah. Okay. Well, it's a must have if you're a Motown fan, music lover. This is the one. Jack Ryan, Recollections, The Detroit Years, The Motown Sound of the People Who Made It, by Jack Ryan, edited by Tom Saunders. Kathy Ryan is with us tonight. Thank you for being here, Kathy.
Thank you.
And you too, Jack.
Well, I was glad to come along with them because I wouldn't have known how to get here without them.
I understand.
And your lovely wife directing us.
She did. She was out front there, and she said, it's back there. Just go ahead and turn right, and you're there.
Exactly.
Thank you, Jack. Ryan has been
with
us today.
Mr. Purton.
You make it that way. I like
that. I have enjoyed you for more years than neither of us want to remember. But
always the guys, not the women. thank you, Jack. Appreciate that. Jack Ryan. Thank you, Kathy. Jack Ryan, Recollections of Detroit Years, the Motown Sun. Thank you so much. Thank you
for having us.